Okay, and welcome back. This is going to be a very interesting hour, as always. We try our best. Almost 50 years ago now, the Travis Walton UFO ET, let's be specific, abduction case occurred. And Jennifer and I talked just a few minutes before I went on the air tonight, and she's quite a lady. Travis, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
50 years. How can that be? 50
Incredible.
Years.
You know, almost half a century.
I mean, it's true. And I must tell you, you look, you were on the program long ago. I don't remember how long ago, but maybe close to 30 years, something like that. And what a great evening that was. A great interview. You told the story. I don't know how many times you've told it. I wouldn't even want to guess. 100,000? I don't know. But you did it so well, and you're so sincere about it, because it really changed, in many ways, a lot of us, what happened to you. We understood it was real, and you look just about exactly the same as you did when I had you on the program, way back when. You look great. So whatever you're doing, keep it up. You're welcome. So, okay. Jennifer, how did you get involved with it?
So I don't know if you ever got to see the documentary, but I ended up meeting Travis in Roswell and ended up discussing with him there the idea of doing a 40th anniversary conference and also possibly interviewing some of the original guys in the logging crew. And then it occurred to me that I could probably still interview the sheriff, police officer, Marlon Gillespie, who was involved in the case. Deputy Ellison was still alive, and so was Cy Gilson. So I tracked these three guys down, who were prominent guys from the story, and interviewed them. And then I was running a MUFON symposium, because I've been involved in MUFON for a long time, and I had all these great experts who knew Travis well and were willing to speak on his behalf. Mm-hmm. So I set up a film studio in a hotel in Cherry Hill when I ran the Cherry Hill MUFON symposium and shot interviews with Kathleen Martin and Lee Spiegel and various people, Ben Hansen and Peter Robbins, really all gave me fantastic interviews. And then tracked down a couple more, with people like David Jacobs at the time, who was still quite well, and, other experts, Stanton Friedman. So I realized I had a pretty decent documentary, and actually it's won a lot of mainstream film festival awards, which I'm happy to say. So I think the film about Travis kind of helped to bring the UFO subject more into the mainstream in 2015, before we actually broke with disclosure in 2017, with the Pentagon, with Luis Elizondo and the admission of the ATIP program.
Yeah. Jennifer, you have talked to, interviewed, spent time with, been immersed in this subject with some of the great names in all of ufology. Many of them have been on this program multiple times. Stanton Friedman, I don't know. When you meet these people and you interview them, you kind of think they're always going to be around. And they time passes.
They're not.
And I miss talking to Stan. He's a wonderful man. He was absolutely a delight, and I know you know this, and so many others as well. Peter Robbins, you don't hear, Rendlesham Forest?
Rendlesham Forest, yes.
Peter, you don't hear anything about that anymore. No.
For 20 years or so. And, we've lost four or five of the people now that are in that documentary. We lost John Goulette just in November. We've lost Stanton and Marlon Gillespie, Cy Gilson, and Chuck Ellison are all gone now. I think I may have briefly put Don in there. That was Travis's brother. Travis has just lost him not long ago, so that's six. So, yeah, you really get glad you did this.
You stepped into history, and you recorded it, And we're all the better for that, all of us. And I'm very grateful for that. You know, it's not many people that can do that. You did it.
I think the film also gives most viewers a more, like, personal, or, you know, maybe intimate's not the right word, but, you know, a more closer relationship with Travis himself. I think Travis was mad at me that I named it Travis, the true story of Travis Walton, because he didn't want to make himself stand out as more important than the other members of the crew.
I know.
And I said, Travis, I'm sorry. I have to name it Travis because it's really a window into your life from your perspective as best as it can be. And I think he accepts that now and appreciates that. But I think at first he was like, no, don't call it Travis. So I considered it calling it the Turkey Springs, you know, incident or something. But really, that names it best. Travis, the true story of Travis Walton. You know.
Very good. Well, again, thank you very much for making that film and all the things you've done. Now,
thank you.
Mr. Walton, sir, as you look back on this, we'll call it 50 years. It's awfully close.
Well, it was just curious. In the nick of time that Jennifer was able to interview so many members of the Sheriff's Department and the polygraph examiner before they were gone. And it was just in the nick of time.
Well, it happened, and yes, that's we're all the better off for it. When you look back on this for 50 years, I remember they call him a science writer, but Philip Klass was not a science writer to me. He's a jerk.
No.
Anyway, these people tried to put the event down. They weren't just naysayers. There was an organized effort, I'm sure, and you probably have thoughts on this, to discredit you, discredit the entire incident, the abduction. You were taken. I have no doubt. I never did. Anybody who is honest about this will feel the same way. When you look back at the efforts to discredit you, any thoughts on that? And this started early.
Oh, yeah.
It started early.
It's really strange. I mean, he went to the trouble to go fly down to Texas and find Steve Pierce, take him out to dinner, try to talk him into accepting a $10,000 bribe to deny the truth of the incident.
Yeah.
And, you know, he spent hours and hours and hours talking to Mike on the phone. But what's really curious to me, and I don't have a theory about why, he never tried to talk to me even one time. I'm the one who happened to, and not a single phone call, not
that's
one.
That's funny. No,
when I was on Philip, the Larry King show, Philip Klass came on, he talked right past me.
Did King put him on with you to sort of allegedly balance the story? Was that the deal?
Well, yeah, but he was piped in
remotely.
You know,
okay.
Remotely. And he didn't address me at all. He just ignored me and started swearing at Mike Rogers and just made a fool of himself. But it was really strange that even with an opportunity right there to say something to me, he didn't. And
it's shameful,
you know,
is what it is.
I'm fine that he didn't, but don't you think it's kind of curious that he wouldn't? I think that I would be the one he could, you know, trip up or get to say something foolish or something.
Right. He could have had several verbal traps set for you to try to make you look silly. But he didn't. He wasn't smart enough. He's an idiot. I don't know how he got so much press, except I do know, because he was hired and paid to do what he did, and that's to smear and discredit people. And it was a shame.
Yes,
Jennifer,
I will
go ahead.
Add, I will add, that's absolutely true. I got to go into the American Philosophical Society's archives mm-hmm. in Philadelphia, along mm-hmm. with Stanton Friedman and Kathleen Martin, and we read the Philip Glass files that are there. So the letters that are back and forth between him and Donald Menzel and him and Edward Condon clearly tell you that they were working in an association, in a pack, in a team. And, of course, they were major debunkers. So he was really working for them. And, of course, Donald Menzel was the head of the NSA at that time, also the head of astronomy at Harvard. Very interesting to note that, you know. It's. Yeah. I was very grateful. Yeah.
Well,
I was very grateful
as editor of Aviation Week and Space Technology, you know, he was a main character there. And yet he was under investigation by the FBI. We were able to, through the Freedom of Information Act, get a hold of their investigation of him, and they thought had a very low opinion of him.
Well, I think
apparently,
we just need to look at him for what he was. He was placed to do that job and paid, and he's not the only one. There were others. Jennifer knows. You could probably write a small booklet on these frauds. They're not around anymore like they used to be.
They're still going on. No, well,
yeah, it is going on.
Actually, there are many who have picked up where Philip left off.
Go ahead, Travis.
So much of his FBI file was blacked out, and I'd love to know what was said there. I'm sure they were accusing him of sharing our military defense secrets with the enemy, but selling them or whatever.
Well, I think that's probably correct. Now, what they're doing is a little more slick. It's not as bombastic as Class and a couple of the others were. They really used to bother me just hearing their. I wouldn't listen to them much. I couldn't. Anyway, on behalf of all of us who care about you, Travis, and your story and what happened to you, I hope that never really bothered you too much. You're pretty low key about things, so maybe you got on.
Well, at the time, you know, it was they were trying to present the idea that it was preposterous that Earth would be visited by a civilization from another world.
Yeah.
But now, you know, just the basic understanding of astrology of astronomy, it would be a preposterous claim to say. There's trillions upon trillions of stars out there, and they're all devoid of life. If that's the theory that you're sticking by, you're the one with a difficult position to defend.
Absolutely, and if we are the only form of intelligent life out there, we've just been, according to some, and I would say maybe me, surpassed on our own planet by AI. AI has a certifiable human IQ equivalent now of around 1,500, not 110. So maybe we aren't the most intelligent race, species, platform on the planet anymore. I don't know. But if we are alone in the universe, what a bad joke on all of us. Oh,
well, you just go back a few thousand years, and the most technological thing humans had was fire. And so, you know, we're new on the scene, and barely here. And based on the age of these star systems, other civilizations exist that are possibly hundreds of thousands or millions of years older than we are.
Of course. Absolutely. How, Jennifer, if you had to sum all this up, This stupid, insulting argument that we're the only life form out there, how would you take care of that as a journalist? What would you do? These people don't really deserve the time of day. I don't need a long thing. You don't. In other words, you don't spend much time with the deniers because it's so absurd. How many planets are there similar to Earth in this particular galaxy, the Milky Way? How many? It's something like
right.
$800 billion, isn't it?
Oh,
it's crazy.
I have to tell you, I don't know the numbers, but I do know that it was only in about 2012 or 2013 that one of the people that worked with the James Webb Telescope, and I'm blanking on his name right now, but he's the one that saved up a number of hours on his satellite time, because you get it for a couple of hours as an astronomer, and that's it. So he saved up like 5 days' worth of time over like
on the,
6 months.
On the telescope?
Right? Yeah, so that he could turn the telescope to the darkest spot of space and just let it sit there for like 4 days. And everybody said, what are you wasting your time for? Why are you pointing it at the darkest spot in space for 4 days? We know nothing's there. And he said, because light takes time to enter the telescope. And if we don't point it at the darkest point in space, we're never going to have confirmation that we're not alone. And that was like 10 years ago. He's the one that said, oh, my God, look at what light filled the telescope in 4 days. So that means there are billions.
Mind.
There are billions upon billions. That's why we know.
Yeah.
Because some brave soul knew it and pointed his telescope out there and said, I'm going to get proof.
That's brilliant. That really is smart. I don't know how to even phrase the concept of life out there, except to simply say there are too many different kinds to even begin to count. That's my view.
That's right.
Impossible.
That's right. That's right.
So, Travis, let's go back to the actual event. I don't want you to go through the whole thing. But when you were on the craft against your will, you were pretty aggressive. Now, that doesn't always happen. How do you feel about that now?
I felt very threatened, and so I was fighting for my life. In my view,
yes.
It turns out it probably wasn't the case, but that's what I felt at the time.
Right. Well, that's what I was thinking, and they didn't like that you were fighting. They didn't.
Well, no, I think they wanted to. Revive me, to restore me, to fix what happened by being hit by that blast of energy. But I was so uncooperative that they were not going to be able to help me under those circumstances.
And for our listeners, how long? Now, time is a funny thing, and their time may not be our time. I don't pretend to say I know, or it is or it isn't, but keep that in mind. How long were you missing and apparently in their custody?
5 days and 6 hours.
Okay.
And but I was conscious for a very brief period of time. I was either dead or unconscious the rest of that time.
Mm-hmm. The beam that they hit you with, did they ever explain that to you, or do you ever have an intuitive sense about that?
They never explained it, but I thought it could have been just an accident, that it was a static discharge that built up in the craft. And when I closed that distance, the energy jumped to ground through me.
Mm-hmm. No, that was a big bolt. It could have been a bolt of lightning, I guess, in some ways, because it was very powerful. You survived. Many might not have, and that's true. And I think you're characterizing it as possibly an accident. Maybe they wanted to hit you with something, but not that strong. That may be one way to look at it. There are many. But have you had any long, lifelong, 50 years long, residual physical or emotional effects from that beam? Not the event, but from getting hit with that beam, whatever it was.
Well, I think there were some... I expected that negative medical, health effects. But as time went on, I wasn't getting sick at all. So for a number of years there, I never called in sick one time. The whole time I was working at the paper mill or the molding mill.
Do we go to E.T. as maybe having done something when you weren't aware to try to restore Any physical damage that was done?
I think that's what they did.
And that
technology beyond us. If they had just left me there, I would have just been dead. The crew would have carried my body into town.
Well, that doesn't surprise me to hear you say that. I think that's a very good way to look at it. I think you're right in all likelihood. It sounds to me like that they did have some care and concern for you, that you were able to discern during the time you were away with them, whenever you remember it. They weren't, in other words, they weren't hostile during the event itself. They were trying to...
Even to the point of, you know, sacrificing the low-key sort of undercover approach to their visitations here.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yes. Jennifer, anything to add to that? You know this case inside and out, too. Travis is a very lucky man. Let's put it that way.
He's a lucky man. One of the things Travis points out all the time is that Mogollon Rim, where they had been logging, gets huge numbers of lightning strikes to begin with. And there could very well be, like, magnetic charge in the ground. Maybe they were sucking up from or something. There's a lot of fulgurites
I was hit with a secondary discharge, something that hit the craft, and then when I closed the distance, jumped to ground through me.
That's interesting.
Right.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I suspect that it was accidental. The craft may have had some sort of, like, shield it put up, you know, or something like, if anything penetrates this, we'll repel it back kind of thing.
Yeah.
But because they were so close to the ground and because there's a lot of magnetic energy in the ground, Travis stood up, you know, from crouching behind a wood slash pile and to run back to the truck. And at the moment he stood up, boom, that's when it hit him and pushed him back, from what the guys explained. So,
Trav, do you think that they they were obviously aware of the crew? Were they tracking you in particular, or were all five of you?
Well, I think, just by making a foolish move and getting out and going close to it, I got singled out.
And they were, that's what I'm trying to get at. And you've lived with
this
for 50 years.
I had sort of a joking exchange with Steve, the youngest guy on the crew. You know, his girlfriend said, "How come you didn't get out of the truck?" And he was embarrassed. So he said, "Well, it was mind control, you know." they used mind control to get Travis out of the truck so he'd go up to them. And I said, "Well, Steve, what if the mind control was to keep us in the truck and I was the one resisting it?"
That's funny.
I'm just kidding. I don't think there was any mind control there.
No. What I'm saying and postulating is that you advanced toward the ship. They were aware of it. They were tracking you, however they track. And something triggered that energy to hit you. That I don't. And hearing you now, again, I'm more convinced than ever that they weren't trying to hurt you at all. So I think I think there was something that went amiss.
I just closed the distance, and it jumped, discharged.
Yeah.
Well,
Jennifer, go ahead.
Keep in mind, Travis explains, too, that there was, when he got out of the truck, at first it was kind of silent, or they didn't hear anything because they were in the truck. But when Travis got out and got closer to it, the craft started to make some noise. It started to kind of lift up a little bit. It started to undulate. It started to move. Whereas before, it was just kind of, at least their appearance of it, from what they observed of it, it was still. And it was just 15 feet off the ground. I mean, you know, John Goulet said, "God, you could throw a stone and hit it." You know, it wasn't that high off the ground. It was below the canopy of the trees, so it was kind of hovering in a clearing where a large tree had been cut the year before. So the canopy was removed, And it was kind of hovering down in there in that canopy, only about 20 feet off the ground, 15, 20 feet. So Travis, running under it, you know, it kind of started to lift up, make noise, high-pitched sounds, low-pitched noise. Obviously, it was trying to probably pull away, move up, gear up. And in doing that, Travis may have triggered something in an automatic response of the craft, penetration shields or something they turned on.
That makes perfect sense.
You know?
Yes, perfect sense. So you got, Travis, you did get directly underneath it. Is that right? Fascinating.
Yeah,
and it's only 20 feet, 25 feet.
The sound got louder, and that's when I went into a crouch. But then when I stood up to run back, that brought my head the closest to them. Surface of that craft,
which was what, 30 feet?
It was probably less than 10 feet. I don't know.
Oh my! It was right down on. Oh wow! I didn't know it was.
Yeah, it's only 20 feet off the ground. Travis is like 6 foot himself, so it's like 12 feet. 15 feet.
Wow.
So the other thing the boys talk about in the truck, Mike Rogers said he could feel the pounce of that bolt that hit Travis. He could feel it in the seat under him. He could feel it in the steering wheel. He could feel it in the door of the car under his arm. I mean, that bolt went through those boys' bodies. They all
felt it.
That's fascinating.
I've never heard
riveting.
This before.
Yeah, no,
this
it was riveting to them. That's why they slammed the door and drove away.
Gotcha.
I mean, they were freaked out.
I don't hold it against them for leaving. Some people, act like, they're being unheroic to take off at that point. But, Mike's responsibility was for the lives of everyone. And to them, it looked totally fatal to them. They thought it had killed me.
Not to mention the fight or flight instinct, the self-preservation instinct. This is unknown territory. Plus, if they're looking at you, they had you under full eye contact while you're under the ship, right? They could see you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your head is less than 10 feet from the shell of this craft. This is mind-boggling. I didn't know it was that close.
Yeah.
Well, the blast was so violent the way it threw me back, and my body just felt like a bundle of rags, that they just knew it had killed me.
It sounds now, like what, it should have.
Right. I think it did, Jeff. I think it did. From talking to all the crew members and talking to Travis, as the journalist, behind the film, I for sure think it did kill him. So when they got up to the top of the hill, this is what a lot of people don't understand. They're confused by the story. And, of course, a lot of people just know it from Fire in the Sky. That film confused people because it fictionalized this part of the story, which is very important. So the guys go up, they drive out of this forest valley that they're in called the Turkey Springs Valley. They get to the top of this ridge called the Mogollon Rim where there's a dirt road. And it's dark now by this point. And Mike Rogers says to the other guys in the crew, look, I got to go back and get him. I'm the responsible crew boss. You guys get out of the truck, help me turn the truck around, and then I'll go back and get Travis, and you guys all wait here, right? And I think he even offered to give him gas cans out of the, and for them to build a little fire to stay warm if they wanted, because this is November, in the middle of that dirt road that's a gravel road, they could build a little fire and stay warm and then kick it out, afterwards, and it'd be fine. And they're talking about doing this, and they're turning the truck around, and they're arguing, and they're upset. And they can see the craft below them because they're on the top of the ridgeline now, and the valley is below them, and they can still see this light. And they keep looking at it to see if it's following them because they're freaked out, like, is it going to come up here? And then they see the craft take off. So all the guys were standing outside the truck or getting back into the truck when the craft flew away. That's why they all got back in the truck and went down to help Mike get him, to find Travis, pick him up. And that's when they got back to the spot. Then they couldn't find Travis. And that's when they knew they had to go to town and report him. So, like, I guess these beings realized, oh, look, we got a window. They drove away. Great, let's pick them up. Nobody will know. So they pick them up.
If most of you remember the stories you've heard about E.T. abductions of humans, many people can reconstruct something about how they were taken on board or taken out of their room, whatever. A lot of stories out there. But Travis, you have no recollection of being taken on board the ship at all. Am I right?
Yeah, just waking up in their presence.
I think, and I'm just saying this from an observer's standpoint, I think you've got this figured out about as well as you're going to. I think you have the truth. I think that they hurt you. They knew it. Maybe they killed you, and they brought you back. That's what I think. And I've been aware of the story for, 25 years, whatever. But I think you're correct. Jennifer, you think so?
Yeah, I do. And, his story is so unique and so different than so many abduction stories that it's kind of heartwarming. Like, it kind of makes you think, like, well, maybe these are intelligent, smart beings. And, of course, the other very interesting part of Travis's story is he encounters more than one species that seem to be working together, right? So there were the little grays.
To that in just a minute, too, if we can. Okay, so I just want to establish that you're on board, you wake up on board, you don't remember being lifted up through a beam of light, none of that. I just don't want our listeners to be confused. This man, Travis Walton, in all likelihood was killed. This is just probably the odds. And these visitors picked him up, restored him to life, and I think the evidence of that is certainly partially connected to the fact that he didn't become physically ill for years after being returned and resuming his life, which is very unusual. I think there's a connection there, and I think you do too, Travis, right?
Yeah, I do. I was expecting bad health, but turned out, especially as hard as I was working, trying to forget what happened, you know.
Yeah. I think what we have here is one of the most insightful, unique ET encounters of them all, if what we're talking about here is in fact correct, and I see no reason to think otherwise. This is compassion. This is benevolence. This is, whoops, we got to do something to help. This is kind of a human-like emotional response to a situation, I think, if emotion is the right word. Maybe it's just pragmatism. But what they did was obviously gracious, I think, and kind. That's my take.
Yeah, I think so.
Jennifer, go ahead.
And I think even more than that, if Travis had not been returned, or if Travis was left there for dead, these boys in the logging crew, their lives would have been even worse, more ruined, right?
Right,
some of them could have been charged for murder, or there would have been a suspect about or manslaughter or something or worse.
Yeah.
So it, by bringing Travis back to life and by returning him, 5 days later, after these guys had all taken polygraph tests, it's amazing. Like, you never have this in a UFO story because polygraphs are way too expensive. But since these boys were accused of murdering him and hiding the body, and nobody believed this cockamamie story about a UFO, all these guys took lie detection tests. And that's what's that's the piece of gold to Travis's story. It's like the icing on the cake.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Travis, we're on board. Do you have any pain going back?
Well, my initial impression that they were expressionless, and when we encounter people that show no emotion, we tend to interpret that as hostility.
Yeah. Yes.
But I finally got to thinking, hey, if these beings are telepathic, they don't need facial expressions. That'd be totally obsolete. They can express far more richly to each other telepathically.
Well said. Yes.
In the absence of any facial expressions.
I concur. All right, let's go on board. And we've got the little grays. Everybody knows what the little grays are, and I would submit that that's evidence in itself that we've got a real phenomenon here. Countless, hundreds of thousands of people have reported these little gray creatures, whatever they are. So tell us what's on board and the differences that you noticed. And you again, weren't aware and awake for all the 5 days, but can you give us a quick guess before you tell me the answer to my question?
Well, I was
How long were you awake there? How long were you awake there? Awake and aware.
It was just a very brief period of time.
Okay. All right. What did you see? Go ahead with that. That's fine.
I was in a panic because I felt injured. Felt like I was dying. It was either an injury to my chest or a lack of oxygen in the atmosphere familiar to them. But either way, I felt like I couldn't catch my breath, like I was suffocating, which adds to the panic.
You bet, I'm sure.
So when they took me out of this craft, it was much better lit outside. It's parked inside of a large hangar-like structure. But
did the structure look like it was created in anything we would recognize as construction techniques?
Nothing I recognize in terms of welding or bolting. I didn't see any screws or rivets.
Did it appear to be metallic? Metal? Steel?
Some of it, yeah.
And it's big. It's tall.
Yeah, huge, yeah.
Any other craft to be seen in it?
Yes. Disc-shaped craft of a different configuration. But I wasn't studying these craft. I have very little detail because it was taking me somewhere and I was very anxious about where that was.
Who was taking you? Was it a gray?
No, it was a human-looking being. And that's why. You know, that's the only person that I would cooperate with. And if it was necessary that I cooperate in order to save my life, it's a good thing they introduced this human-looking person.
Was this what we call a tall blonde, or was this something, perhaps, and I'm not trying to deconstruct this, but could they have somehow put in your mind that you are seeing a human?
Yeah, it could be either one of those, either a simulation or duplication of something that I would be reassured enough to cooperate with.
Gotcha. Yeah, very good. Okay, so you're being led away from the craft. Where are you being led to, do we know?
Well, out of this larger hangar-like area, down the hallway to a smaller room where there were some other people dressed similar to him, only without helmets on. So I thought, well, you know, I can understand him not trying to answer me with a helmet on. Maybe they will answer me.
And how are they? Go ahead.
And then they didn't answer my questions either. I was extremely anxious.
How were they dressed?
Indeed, I would say hysterical.
Oh, I would be too. Yeah. How were they dressed?
Just a blue uniform. I didn't see any insignia.
Kind of like a one-piece uniform thing? Jumpsuit?
Yeah.
Okay. And they all had the same sort of, we'll call it a jumpsuit on, same sort of thing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
How did their faces hair and eyes look to you?
They were very little expression.
But human.
Yeah.
And they all look different because humans all look different. They look different,
yeah.
Right? Or okay. Blondes, brunettes,
yeah.
Redheads,
yeah, similar uh-huh. type, you know. But I was more concerned with what was happening to me. And
of course.
And then placing in this mask on my face.
Yes, all right. Hold on, Travis. Go ahead, Jennifer.
I was going to mention, Jeff, for your listening audience, that if people go to TravisWaltonTheMovie.com, I've put up a page there called the debunking page, and there's several videos there people can watch. One of them is the Onboard the Craft experience. So we reenacted it with actors, and we did CGI with it, and it's very step-by-step methodical from the moment Travis begins to gain consciousness, which we don't know how long that period of time was. It could have been an hour. It could have been 2 hours. You know, at first he could hear movement around him. He thought he was in a hospital. He couldn't see very well, and he couldn't breathe. Now, if he was dead and not breathing, that makes a lot of sense that when he wakes up, he's struggling for his breath, right?
Yeah, you bet. Yeah.
And so okay. I put the whole reenactment up there. People can go look at it and see it. And it will really answer a lot of their
again.
Questions. Happily, TravisWaltonTheMovie.com. And it's the debunking page, because when they get there, there's several listed across the top of the page, or there's three little lines to get to a menu somewhere, like a lot of good websites. And, you know, find the debunking page and then scroll through some of the videos there. And there's one listed, Onboard the Craft Experiences, and they can watch it and just really get a good sense of just that section of his film.
Well, please, all of you, take advantage of this kind offer and go watch it. This is unlike any other abduction, if I can even call it an abduction. I might even call it a rescue of a human being that I've ever heard. And I've been listening to a lot of people for a long time. I want to go look at this. I just haven't had time. But I am going to watch this. Travis, we're back with you now. You were taken down a hall into a room with others that looked human. But were they talking to each other at all? Do you recall anything like that? Now, you are, again, in total...
Nothing verbal, nothing. I could hear my own screams and yelling and hysteria, but they didn't respond to any of it.
Okay. All right. What happened to you next? What did they do? What did your guide do?
They put a mask over my face, and I lost consciousness.
Did they lay you down first?
Yeah, they were holding me down on this table. I, at that point, you know, I was resisting because I was going to try to insist that they answer questions before I cooperated. But I was in a pretty weakened condition, and there were the three of them, so they were able to overpower
and they were,
me.
Were they all humanoid, the three of them that were holding you down?
Yes.
Okay. And they put a mask on you. Were they all humanoid, the three of them that were holding you down?
Yes.
Okay. And they put a mask on you. That, in terms of its purpose, a mask is obvious.
Well, I think it was an anesthetic. You know,
yes.
I don't know what else it would be.
Of course. But, I mean, you didn't see any medical instruments or anything that we would relate to as humans. It's our type of medicine. It was different.
At that point, I did not.
Okay. All right. Jennifer, go ahead. We only have about 6 minutes left, and you know the high points we want to hit. Travis, I'm amazed. Let me just say this. I'm amazed at your resilience and your dedication to this. What I'm hearing is an event that stretches the boundaries of any common human perception of E.T. visitation, E.T. abduction. I no longer think this was an abduction in the traditional sense. That's my take at this
point. Well, me too. But, you know, I do try to, you know, distinguish that that's my own conclusion, you know. I could be wrong, but...
No, that's the conclusion that I would come to following your lead. Exactly. Jennifer, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, since it's the 50th anniversary this year, it's 2025, and it was 1975, so that's 50 years. We're doing a conference in Sedona, a small UFO conference called the Skyfire Summit, where we'll be honoring Travis. Travis will also be speaking. We'll be doing a little 50-year retrospective. And if people go to Sedona MUFON, MUFON is M-U-F-O-N, stands for the Mutual UFO Network, and I'm a state section director for the Sedona MUFON programming. That goes on there. So we're doing a four-day conference in October, October 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th. It should be a lot of fun. There's a lot of information up there at SedonaMUFON.org. It's O-R-G. So we're doing a film, Accidental Truth, which is another film I helped produce. Ron James and I produced together. So we're showing that Friday night, and then we've got a conference Saturday, half a day Sunday, and then we're closing out on Monday morning with the Global New Paradigm Institute's Global Awareness Day on UFOs. So we'll be talking to UFO groups via Zoom from all over the world, and that's how we'll close the conference. So it's very special.
Oh, that's a very nicely produced event. That's a special one. I would urge all of you to consider going to that. That'll be a life changer. That's great. Good job.
Yeah, it's not a huge conference, and it's not going to happen again. It's not like a conference I'm going to do every year. This is just a once-in-a-lifetime 50-year, celebration. And there's a couple of other things going on as well, but they're listed on the website. On November 5th, we'll be screening at the Sedona Film Festival two shows of my documentary on Travis. And then on November 8th, we're also going to do something at the Arizona Historical Society with Phoenix MUFON with a dinner reception afterwards, so people can join us there as well.
Very good. All right, back to Travis for our remaining time here. Over the years since, first of all, when you were released, put back for our listeners, and they need to go see this page that Jennifer just mentioned, please go and take a look. Travis Walton, W-A-L-T-O-N, themovie.com. When they put you back, where did they put you back, just for our listeners' sake who don't know?
I found myself waking up on the pavement outside the town nearest where this happened. And I can, in hindsight, figure out why that was, the Heber, the town nearest where we were, is kind of at the junction of several steep-walled canyons, sort of cliff edges, and it was a place where they could descend and remain completely invisible for miles around. But yet, where I was, I could see the lights of the town down below.
Heber,
and then
I've heard that run down
in there and find a phone and call my family.
In all the 50 years since, have you ever had anything that you would think might be some kind of contact from those people again, checking up on you, letting you know you're going to be okay, et cetera, whatever?
Well, you can imagine I would be very conscious of any such indications.
Yes,
maybe some things, but I nothing I know for sure.
I have a hunch that they've been watching you, wouldn't you think?
And I didn't used to think so. I had a theory. I called it the anthill theory, The idea that people would make contact with these beings and that they would be of some significance to them. And I thought, they're so more advanced than us. It would be like us walking past an anthill and saying, I think I'll stop and have a conversation with that little ant right there. And how absurd would that be? But in hindsight, I'm thinking, on the contrary, if you've had any sort of contact in the past, Mm-hmm. And here, 15, 20, 30 years later, you have another. They know it's you.
Sure.
They can
We've heard so many. Yeah. Well, we've heard, how many stories have we heard? Jennifer, and you as a researcher.
Thousands.
Travis, you.
Thousands.
Yeah, endless. About tracking families, tracking genetics, tracking the same gene line. They're going to do that. But in this case, this was a special event, a special case. And I'm sure they've been watching. Somebody has.
Yeah, I think so. I point to the Utah Data Center, which is a government computer system up there mm-hmm. in Utah. It's cool with millions of gallons of water. It's the largest computer in the world, probably. It's recording every electronic transmission on the face of the earth. Mm-hmm. And if mere humans can keep track of that much data, I'm sure the aliens can keep track of us.
No doubt. Travis, we're out of time this hour, but I want to thank you personally as a fellow human for standing up and going through this and staying with the truth in spite of a lot of...
Well, thank you for your interest and your consideration.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Any final quick comment for people out there who may have been experiencers but who have never talked about it? Should they come forward and talk? What do you think?
If they feel that they would like to, go ahead. I think that the aliens expect that. It's part of the conditioning.
Got it. Very good. Thank you, my friend. Be well and be happy. This is great. Wonderful to talk to you again.
All right. Good night.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff.
And Jennifer, thank you for all you've done, and you're a very special person. Both of you are, and this is just really enjoyable. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. All right, Jennifer Stein, Travis Walton. It's a great story. Go look at that movie. Travis Walton, themovie.com. You can't miss it. And look for the onboard experiences. She's reenacted that. With his guidance. Fascinating. All right. We'll pause and come back.